Ooh, that's a hot mic. Yeah, we're not gonna have the Unalaska Crab Inc. Meeting tonight due to the lack of an Opelio season, which is the only reason that we have that one. For that one item on there. The other two items on the agenda for Unalaska Crab Inc. will be taken up on November 8th at the annual meeting of Unalaska Crab Inc. then. And with that, I will call the Unalaska, or this regular meeting of the City of Unalaska to order at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 11th, 2022. The mission statement reads, to provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government. Madam Clerk, may I have the roll call, please?
Certainly. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Present.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
And Mr. Tudyakov?
Here.
Oh boy. All right, we have a quorum, six in attendance, and the mayor. Will you please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Recognition of visitors. I don't see, as you see, Mr. Noel Ray. It's good to see you. And Dusty Dickerson. I didn't get your name. You have?
William Carter.
William Carter. And you're with?
My wife, Patricia, the boss.
Okay. There you go. And may I get a motion and a second to adopt the agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the proposed agenda is adopted. May I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of the proposed minutes of September 27th?
Move to approve minutes of September 27th, 2022.
I'll second.
Moved by Coleman and seconded by Luby. Hearing no objection, the proposed minutes here are approved. Go to the city manager's report, and we'll turn that over to Mr. Humka.
Yes, thank you, Vice Mayor. City manager's report has been put before you. Most of it has been written by the interim city manager, Mr. Chris Laddick, who is on the phone, and I'm sure he's willing to take any questions about most of those.
Are there any questions? Ms. Coleman.
Yes, thank you. This is not on the report, but I was curious about the wind study. We've had all those test stations out. They've been down. They were up for like 3 years. They came down on the data. So what's the data, and when do we can expect to see the analysis on that?
I expect the wind study to be presented at some point here in the next month. Tom, if you'd like to answer that.
Bill, you said exactly what I was going to say. So where we're at right now, our consultant, Doug Vaught, is working on a cost estimate, and he has the final report prepared, but he's waiting for the cost estimate so he can present those two together. And we don't know exactly what day, but we're looking at maybe end of November?
I think we have it scheduled in the next, in our outlook for the next 3 months, and we have it in November, the first or second meeting. So okay. Whenever we're able to get that data is when we'll present it.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Bell?
I guess follow-up question that is, when do we expect the cost data next month? I guess why has it taken so long?
Yeah.
I can't really speak to why it's taking so long, but I do know that they're working on the estimate and just gathering their data, and I'm guessing they probably have a lot of other work they're accomplishing as well.
Okay, we paid a lot of money for that wind study, so, in less than several years, we would have expected some data back. Thank you. My other question is, has there been any contact with Raven as far as trying to reach out and speak with them and relay the community's concerns?
I'll defer that question to Chris. Chris, can you, or if you're on the line, can you answer that question for Councilman Bell?
You're going to have to repeat it. I'm missing like large chunks of the communication.
Can you answer Mr. Bell's question if there has been any communication with Raven since the last council meeting? I have had none.
No, I have had none.
Do we have phone calls in? They're just not responding to them. Is that correct? Okay.
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
No, I don't have any phone calls in to Raven at this time.
We've put calls in the past 3 weeks, though, Chris.
Ms. Libby, you have anything?
No, not at this time. Thanks.
Mr. Nicholson?
I have nothing at this time. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Tungel?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. Yeah, I got one quick question in regard to Cottage Bay Road. I know the DC trip is coming up. Did we ever get that thing on the step? The Captain's Bay Road?
He's asking if the Captain's Bay Road has been ever added to the STIP.
Mr. Cohen, I was approaching the podium.
Tom, I don't think it has it?
So where that project is at, we did get it on the STIP initially, but it's a multi-year document. When we got it on the STIP, they really liked the project. What they didn't like was the total dollar amount, because I think at the time we had about $54 million allocated for the project, and that was way over what they felt was that they would contribute to the project at the time. We were working with the city planner in Juneau, and they suggested that we phase the project, which we've subsequently done. And we've redesigned it a little bit by taking the road closer to the cliff, and that reduced the cost. So the cost is down, we phased the project. And when the next go-round for the STIP application comes up, which is, I believe, sometime this fall, then it'll be back on the STIP officially again.
That answer your question, Mr. Tungel?
After we based it a while ago, over 6 months ago, so I never got into the STIP after facing it then. There's no other application then turned in after we based it into four phases.
Mr. Tungel, if I may, it's still in the process of being phased, and it will more than likely get on the STIP this fall.
Mr. Vice Mayor, if I can.
Yes, Mr. Laddick.
Thank you. Staff is going to meet internally to discuss the project and sort of figure out the path forward, and we will make sure this comes before the council before it goes to ADOT to be put on the STIP. We'll have a workshop with the city council and discuss, here's where this project is at, and here's my recommendation for moving forward.
Thank you.
Is there anything else, Mr. Tungel?
No, thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. That's it for me. Thank you.
All right, thank you. For me, it's just the only thing is the question of the DC trip and how that is coming along. I know it takes some time to get all of the various appointments in order, but maybe if we can enlighten the council on that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. I emailed Sebastian today. He's waiting to hear back from us. He says it's going to be 2.5 days of meetings right around the 5th. So I know AML is about that time, too, and we need to let him know what works for us.
Right, another key part of that is us setting our legislative priorities, so, and that'll be coming up at the next meeting.
Mr. Vice Mayor, do you know when AML is this year?
They're talking December after the North Pacific Fish. Well, no.
December 7th.
I will have to get back. I'm sorry?
I think it's December 7 to 9.
7 to 9, yeah. It sounds about right.
So we got to try to make it work so that we can get to DC and also hit AML, right?
That's hopefully the plan.
Okay, so if I know I got 2.5 days, I will discuss with Sebastian O'Kelly how to make that work.
Great, thank you. Is there any further on the city manager's report? With that, we'll go to community input and announcements. So this is a time for the community to put or input on and announcements. Roger.
How are you? Thank you, Council. Vice Mayor, thank you for letting me have this opportunity. Just for the community's information, on Friday, October 14th at the Aquatic Center from 5 to 6:30 from 6:30 to 8:30 is our event for the pumpkin plunge. Come and plunge for a pumpkin and have all the fun that goes with it, decorating and all that kind of stuff. And then on Friday, October 28th, and I stress this, Friday, October 28th, it's not the 31st, we're having our Halloween event. And the event will be from 5 to 7:30. Along with that, the Teen Council for PCR is presenting a trunk or treat same time, 5:30 to 7:30, in back of the community center parking lot. If it's good weather, we'll do it there. If not, we'll do it somewhere else in the center, but we will have a good trunk or treat. So I invite all the community out, enjoy the holiday, this Halloween holiday, and enjoy all the candy, and come have fun. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Blakely.
Mayor, Council. Thomas Rufos, President of the Alaska State Firefighters Association local chapter. Just a reminder, we are currently selling tickets for the ASFA gun raffle. Tickets are $50. We still have a few left available in town, so please find one of your local firefighters and support a great cause. Thank you.
This is just a quick shout out and a thank you to the U.S. Coast Guard Kimball. We've been working to partner with the U.S. Coast Guard for some of our in-department training. And today we did a table talk exercise with U.S. Coast Guard and then got out on the water and practiced search patterns and grid patterns and all kinds of different approaches to how we typically would do or how they would typically do search and rescue. Incredibly valuable training and a great representation of partnership with the U.S. Coast Guard. So thank you, U.S. Coast Guard.
Thank you. And Mr. Dusty Dickerson, he's spearheaded a project for Alaska that's going to benefit this community far into the future. And without his tenacity and just his drive to maintain a quota that Bobby Storrs got specifically for Unalaska, he's got a special announcement to make. Mr. Dickerson, please.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Robinson and members of the City Council. For the record, my name is Dustin Dickerson, and I'm the Vice President of the Unalaska Native Fishermen's Association. The Unalaska Native Fishermen's Association had an important victory at the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council just a few days ago. After 4 years of enjoyable work by UNFA, the council voted to create a new small boat sector 10 to 1. What that means in practical terms is that the balance has been restored within the under 60 sector, and that local small boat fishermen have the same opportunities we did 25 years ago to start small and grow. It means that if you're a young man or woman that has ever dreamed of a life on the ocean, commercial fishing, that you can do that now. It's actually remarkable, and we owe the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council a big thank you for their responsiveness to the needs of our rural Alaskan coastal communities. And since this is a federal action, it will benefit Unalaskans for generations to come. But this was truly a community effort, and we can all share in the credit. Without the many letters of support, including a resolution by this city council, and without the support of the Cowal-Lincoln tribe and the Onalushka Corporation, who knows what would have happened. That said, I think it's important to recognize the individual community members who wrote letters to the council and gave verbal testimony expressing how important this is, our local small boat fleet is to them culturally and historically. And we should give a heartfelt thank you to Sharon Savarni Livingston, Gert Savarni, Caleb Livingston, Landon Shiznikoff, Jim Paulin, Alvin Bereskin, Susie Golodoff, Bridget Savage, Pastor John Honan, Diego Castillo, Claire Lattimore, Jeanette Leon, Dave Magone, Dave Gregory, my wife Evie, Anatoly Foman, Scott Lawrenson, John Marion, Vinnie James, and Tim Mahoney. We would also like to give a special thanks to those who gave verbal testimony before the council and over the phone in person. Vinnie James, John Marion, Dennis Robinson on behalf of himself, Scott Lawrenson, and Mayor Tudiakoff and Frank Kelty on behalf of the city. We also had a letter of support from the Akutan Fishermen's Association that was written by Hugh Pelkey. I would also like to acknowledge special help from Governor Dunleavy's rural advisor, former rural advisor, and UNFA's very first secretary, John Moeller. At the North Pacific Council, we had significant help from Councilwoman Teresa Peterson, who took an interest in our project early on and introduced us to the council, Councilman Andy Mezzaro, who carried our flag when Teresa left the council, advisory panel co-chair Matt Upton, who did an excellent job making our motions at the AP and defending us vigorously, and the advisory panel chairwoman Angel Drobnica, who helped guide the process. But in the end, it was the state of Alaska, Department of Fish and Games, Rachel Baker, and Carla Bush who were making the motions on our behalf before the council. And we owe them a special debt of gratitude for their wisdom and forethought that brought us this new small boat sector that we have today. It was the state's final motion that was a grand compromise and would satisfy all parties, large and small, within the under 60 sector. So this was a really big deal, and we thank you all very much.
Thank you, Dusty, and I allowed you to go over the 3 minutes allotted because this is such an important issue that to Unalaska that and I think we'll survive it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Is there any other further public? Yeah, Ms. Libby.
Yeah, on behalf of the Unalaska senior citizens, I just wanted to let everybody know that we have resumed our lunch program for seniors only for right now. It's been a long time since we've been able to get them all together, and they're really enjoying being together and being able to get out and out of their homes and communicate and stuff. So we started out slow with just seniors only, 60 and over. And hopefully eventually we'll be able to expand that. But I'm excited to be able to have it back open again instead of just doing Meals on Wheels. And it was a success for the last week. So I'm happy about that. If any seniors would like to come to lunch, we have it starting at 11:30 Monday through Friday. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further?
Vice Mayor, I'd just like to remind everyone that there's a community swim meet scheduled for Friday, October 21st at the pool. Starts at 6. I know all of you are already signing up here, but I just want to remind you. Everyone's welcome.
Great. Thank you. So, hearing no more. I'm sorry.
I do have one announcement.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes.
I just want to remind everybody that your property tax second half payment is going to be due October 20th, both real property and personal property, business personal property, October 20th.
Great.
And I do have one person on the phone who would like
to. I was going to ask you next. Sorry about that.
So, Mr. Kelty, I just sent you an unmute request, and your 3 minutes starts now.
Mr. Vice Mayor, for the record, my name is Frank Kelty. I just wanted to touch bases a little bit about some of the crab news we got yesterday. As many of the council members know, and I don't know if everybody in the public knows, but the Bering Sea snow crab season is not going to open up on October 15th. It's usually 5th in January. And the Bristol Bay red crab season is closed for the second year in a row. While we were in Anchorage, we were able to participate, myself, Mayor Tudikoff, the two council members in Anchorage, along with the industry reps and other community reps, at a roundtable with ADF&G commissioner on Monday morning at 8:30. We spent a little over an hour with the commissioner and gave him our concerns and the need for at least some kind of a short season. Well, late Monday afternoon, we got the word that they were not going to do it. The ADF&G felt they had to balance the needs of impacts to the harvesters, processors, and communities with the long-term need of conservation and sustainability and rebuilding of crab stock in the Bering Sea, and that they want to focus on conservation and rebuilding stock. So there will not be a season there. The only little bit of sunshine we saw was that the Eastern Bering Sea tanner crab season is going to open up on October 15th. For the eastern area has been closed for over 5 years, and it had 1,163,000 pounds for that area. And then the western Bering Sea tanners will be about 850,000 pounds. So 2 million pounds is all we have to look forward to this fall on our crab fisheries, and I'm sure it'll only be a handful of boats to go out there. And one other item that is fairly important, we just heard about when the council meeting started last week, was that the Alaska Bering Sea crabbers have requested an emergency order at NOAA Fisheries, requesting that the king crab savings area be closed for a foreseeable future for all gear types. Now, the council is working towards to have some discussion on this and weigh in on it at the December meeting, but NOAA also has the opportunity to move this ahead on their own. And this is for all gear types. And so that could be quite a big impact to many of our fishing fleets, the longline cod, the pollock, pelagic trawlers that fish in there in that key crab savings area. So keep that on your radar, and we'll get back to you when we hear more on that. And I know my time is up, but it was great working with Dusty on CQ, the small boat cod issue, 4 years to get that done, and congratulations to all involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelty. Is there any further? Madam Clerk.
No, sir.
The other council members, Kungle or Nicholson?
No questions or comments. Thank you.
No question.
Great, thanks. No problem. So we arrived at the public comment on agenda items. This is a time for the members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If you don't want to wait until the item comes up on the regular agenda to comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the clerk. Please come to the podium, use a microphone, state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes, and the council will not engage in dialogue Does anyone present wish to speak? Okay, thank you. All right. Is there anybody on Zoom or the phone wishes to speak?
No, sir.
Great, thank you. This time we've public hearing. We've got two ordinances set for public hearing. I will convene a special. I will convene a public hearing on each item separately. Members of the public may testify about any item set in the public hearing. There is a 3-minute time limit per person. Please come to the podium and state your name. Public hearing is now open for ordinance 2022-16, amending section 2.20.075 of the Unalaska Code of Ordinances, removing prohibition of council members participating in executive session by telephone and adding participation in meetings by other electronic means. Is there anyone present wish to speak? Madam Clerk, has there been any written comments submitted?
No.
Is there anybody on Zoom or on the phone?
No, sir.
No. The public hearing for ordinance 2022-16 is now closed, and I will open the public hearing for ordinance 2022-17, creating budget amendment number 2 to the fiscal year 2023 budget. To 1, increase wages, fringe benefits, and associated State of Alaska PERS contributions for IUOE Local 302 union employees, covering increased wage scales, longevity bonuses, and education incentives for 3 collective bargaining units agreements. Number 2, recognizing local support revenue of $10,834 from APIA in the general fund and increasing the PCR operating budget by $10,834 for the senior exercise program. And 3, increasing the mayor and council budget by $75,000 to fully fund 2 community fireworks shows, appropriating an additional $252,154 from the electric proprietary fund for generator sets rebuild project. And 5, appropriating an additional $526,447 from the water proprietary fund for the waste, the pyramid water treatment chlorination or chlorine upgrade project. Does anyone present wish to speak? Madam Clerk, do we have any written or?
No, sir.
And is there anybody on the phone?
No, sir.
This public hearing is now closed. I will now go back into the regular agenda, and people wishing to speak in the regular agenda items must sign up with the clerk. A three-minute time limit per person. In unfinished business, we have, well, 2 items. We have ordinance number 2022-16, second reading, amending section 2.20.075 for the Unalaska Code of Ordinances, removing the prohibition of council members participating in executive session by telephone and adding participation in meetings by other electronic meeting means. May I have a motion and a second to adopt ordinance 2022-16?
Move to adopt ordinance 2022-16.
Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. Turn this over to the manager.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. This ordinance 2022-16 was created via a council directive to the city manager. City Clerk Marjorie Veter did all the preparation and work on this, and I would defer to her for any questions or comments that you may have regarding this matter.
Are there any questions? We'll start with Mr. Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. At this present time, I will be in support of this ordinance, and I think that it's a good thing that we will be able to be involved with the executive session over Zoom or via phone. Thank you.
Mr. Tungle?
No question.
Ms. Coleman?
Yeah, I'm going to move to amend ordinance 2022-16. Regarding you, OCU 2.20.025, so that the last sentence of paragraph A reads, if the mayor chooses to participate via telephone or other electronic means, the vice mayor or an appointed mayor pro tem shall preside in the mayor's stead.
There's a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Been moved by Coleman to amend and seconded by Luby. Discussion. Ms. Coleman, speak your motion.
Thank you. I want to thank the Madam Clerk for revising that language for us. I think I had brought it up before, and that it just makes clarification on that particular language as to the process that we do, and so that reflects exactly what we do during meetings.
Great, thank you. Is there further questions or discussion on the amendment? Then obviously nobody signed up for that. Madam Clerk, may we have a roll call on the amendment, please?
Certainly. Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle? All right, Mr. Tungle.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
And Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Motion carries 6 in favor. Now we're back to the main motion and further questions. Ms. Luby?
No questions.
And Mr. Bell?
No, I'll support this. Thank you.
And for me, I support it fully. It's really frustrating. And the amount of travel that that happens, and not being able to participate on the agenda on anything that is done in executive session as a council member hinders a council member's ability to fully weigh in on an issue, and that I think this is a good problem, and this is a good solution to the problem, and I support it. Thank you. Any further questions? Madam Clerk, is anybody signed up?
There is not.
Can we have a roll call, please?
Certainly. Coleman?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Nicholson?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Tungle? Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
And Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Ordinance number 2022-17, second reading, creating budget amendments number two to the fiscal year 2023 budget to increase wages, fringe benefits, and associated state of Alaska PERS contributions for IUOE Local 302 union employees, covering increased wage scales, longevity bonuses, and education incentives for 3 collective bargaining unit agreements. 2, recognizing local support revenue of $10,834 from APIA in the general fund, and increasing the PCR operating budget by $10,834 for a senior exercise program. And 3, increasing the mayor and council budget by $75,000 to fully fund 2 community fireworks shows. Number 4, appropriating an additional $252,154 from the electric proprietary fund for generator sets rebuild project. And number 5, appropriating an additional $526,447 from the water proprietary fund to Pyramid Water treatment plant chlorine upgrade project. May I have a motion and a second to adopt ordinance number 2022-17?
Move to adopt ordinance 2022-17.
Second.
Moved by Coleman, seconded by Bell. We'll turn this over to the manager to introduce.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. As you read, there are five elements to this budget amendment, including a funding for a 302 CBA agreements and a senior exercise program from APIA, accepting funds from that organization, funding two community fireworks shows, transferring funds from the electric proprietary fund for generator rebuilds, and funds from the water proprietary fund for a chlorine upgrade project. City Council last discussed this budget amendment on October 11th at first reading, and staff responded to several questions and response to your questions about generator sets that were emailed to you on October 4th and included in the meeting packet.
In September. Is there a council discussion? Mr. Bell.
Let me start off with the genset rebuilds. On, let's see, packet page number 40. We can scroll that up there.
I'm sorry, Councilman, did you say packet page 40?
Yes.
Okay.
And what I'm looking at is the first bullet point under discussion. What I was looking for was just clarification here on that. At the end of that bullet point there, it says previous rebuilds on the CATs have been in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. And I appreciate including an invoice so we clearly can see what the parts costs are. But that still doesn't answer the discrepancy in difference in rebuilds. Are we comparing like CAT engines? Do we have more than one model of engine? And why the big difference?
Councilmember Bell, that would be comparing like engines. There would be a time period between the time that number 12 was rebuilt and the time number 13 is being rebuilt here, probably 3 or 4 years. So there's been some time in between it. And also, I'm not really claiming that it's an exact apple to apple rebuild, because they're familiar with what the unit needs. They would be similar in frame major rebuilds in that context, but whether it's an exactly the same thing being done to the same engine, in my experience, we've never spent that much on parts for any rebuild in the history of the powerhouse. That's a lot of parts. Wärtsilä or CAT. We've never spent that much on parts. And I believe that it must have something to do with just the price of parts, because there's nothing non-standard about this rebuild, really.
And that's where my question was related to. Do we usually do the pistons and liners, seeing those are the largest costs in there? In what I can find, I haven't seen what CAT has increased their prices that much over that period of time. That would almost double the cost of parts is what it would look like. So the concern moving forward is the next gen set, is it going to be a $750,000 overhaul also?
I hope not. It's based on hours. Number 13 would have more hours than number 12. Number 12 is engine number, what we consider the fourth engine, the newest engine over in the powerhouse. We have two big CATs. And so that eventually will be having this exact same rebuild following along in a couple of years, because they're run similarly. So I would expect at some point we're going to have another very expensive rebuild.
So the difference in cost, the $764,000 to, as opposed to the estimate of $300,000 to $400,000, that's not necessarily an apples to apples comparison in there, and it's kind of irrelevant.
In some ways, yes. But again, it's the most we've ever spent. We've rebuilt engines with more hours on them. That's just a lot. It's an incredible amount of money for parts. It isn't an exact CAT
rebuild to cat rebuild with the exact same number of hours on them. But it is a major in-frame rebuild versus a major in-frame rebuild. And last time we had a major in-frame rebuild on a Wärtsilä, not counting the MSHS issue, was by Wärtsilä. Parts were worth $300,000 to $400,000 in that case as well, for a 36,000 an hour rebuild, so a similar rebuild. So it was really unanticipated when we were way back budgeting the process and the CMMP process, which starts really about now. It was almost we're almost a year later getting the parts in. We didn't anticipate that much in parts.
So is this more of an extensive overhaul than what's happened in the past? And the thought that popped into my head was, is the next one, say, it needs a crankshaft on top of it. Now you're into a lot more money. Is it just these things are, I know they're scheduled on an hourly basis on how many hours they have on them. But is it just as a parts needed type overhaul?
Why don't you let me spend some time teasing out exactly from the maintenance schedule, so you can see exactly what's being done at this one, and what the scope of work is anticipated for the next one.
I guess I don't want to get too much into the minutia of actually rebuilding the engine. I guess where it comes into is when we start looking at the CMMP and we're budgeting years ahead for these major overhauls, and if we put this big giant number out there just in case, then that affects the decision on other projects that we're going to do. So, and that would be what my concern would be.
Right, and I hope that I communicated to everybody that I'm not a fan of the big, huge number. If I would have left the number intact when I budgeted, it would have been $1.8 million, and I'd be returning $800,000 to the proprietary fund, and I'd be a hero. Instead, I budgeted conservatively based on the best information I had, and I had to come to City Council and ask for more money, which I feel like is more transparent, and I think it's more communicating what we're doing. But the original budget for this fiscal year was $1.8 million. We're going to need about $1 million. And if we want to do things different, I really think it's better, because when we do a rate study, they look at all those years. They look at all that planned spending, and then they set the rates to pay for all that. And so you really want to, budget conservatively, and sometimes you need to come for some extra. But if we just have $1.8 million plus 3%, plus 3%, plus 3%, irregardless of what our anticipated needs are, then I'm working for you, but I feel like this is better. And it would have been cool to return $800,000 to the proprietary fund and be a hero, but I still think this is better, because we got to talk about it. I got to tell you guys what my thought process was, and I feel it got us to a better place.
Okay, yeah, and I appreciate that, and I understand the idea, that you'd be a hero returning this money, but when we look at other projects, say, whatever project it may be, the library project or something, say, well, we can't afford to do that because we've got, all this money budgeted over in this project, which is not going to cost anywhere near to what we've got it budgeted, affects the decision on this project over here. So that's my only concern, and I appreciate the information you put in the packet. Thank you.
I too appreciate that, and I think that's we're going to have to, as a city, in the coming year, do a lot more of that, because definitely budgets are going to have to get cut, and just to make up for the revenue shortfall that we're going to be running into. So thank you. Ms. Coleman.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but since we brought it up, the third bullet point actually is the one that really raises my eyebrow. Weren't we using Wärtsilä people to come out here and do the overhauls before, previously? These guys, the Motor Services Hugo Stamp, have we always been using them? Okay, so we've used them They didn't use OEM parts. There was failures, and now...
We're never going to use them again. Okay.
Are we going to go back to you? So, okay. I mean, yeah, there's no point. Thank you. I guess that was... Is that going to be our standard practice, and then are we going to kind of change the way we do business?
No. Okay. I think a lot was learned from that process. I wasn't directly involved. I could give you 100 pages of emails where I disagreed with it. But let's just let it move on. We're never going to use them again.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Libby.
Yeah, I have a couple of things up, more of, it's the budget amendment on the chlorination. And so.
Probably the city engineer could speak more to that because he's been more directly involved in that.
Okay, perfect. Mate, so one concern is it's a 53% increase, and it states here that it's because of the supply chain issues and, sorry, I'm drawing a blank, supply chain issues and the travel and inflation issues. And but then when I go to look at what they're saying is why it's increased is you have engineering and architectural. So that seems more to me like labor costs. And what is the construction services? Is there a breakdown of that $460,000? Is that labor? Is that parts? I'm under the impression that we already purchased the chlorination plant and we need to install it. So anyway, those are some of my concerns there. And I have more questions too after that.
So yeah, on the 460, that is the based on what is available on the available budget based on their bid, which was 660. And that bid price includes of that 660, $125,000 was for materials. Since we have purchased the bulk of the materials already, that was a materials allowance. So we're not expecting that anywhere near that amount will be used on materials, and they would then just submit receipts on materials that they need for to complete the project. So how they're expected to do an inventory on what's already been purchased, decide what they need, and then purchase the additional materials, and those materials out of that $125,000 budget item would be returned as on a reimbursable basis. So of that 661, 125 is materials and the balance of that is labor. And so that's where there was a remaining budget, and so that's how the 460 came. That's how the 460 number came up. And on the 660, that was just for our internal purposes for construction management, so we can have an inspector on site and to have a project manager manage the project. So that's an internal cost, not part of the construction cost.
Okay. And we're going to have somebody on site paying attention to the project as it goes and make sure we don't run into the same problem we just did with the generator. Okay, that would be good. I think that's about all. I'm concerned that we do have somebody on site. There has been some issues with IRI around town, so I just want to make sure that the city's not going to come into a problem later. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further? I'm going to call the other council members. Mr. Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. Ms. Luby answered all my questions with her questions about the Hermit Water Treatment Plant. That was one of my concerns. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tungle?
No question.
Great, thank you. And I don't have any questions on this. I think all this stuff needs to get done, but so Mr. Bell, you have another question now?
Yes, related to the same project and just clarifying some of the numbers here. In the paragraph before, on the page before this, part of it is it's expected an additional $288,000 in costs associated with completing the project was the IRI was asking for. But down in the financial part of it, this requested amount is $460,000. What's the discrepancy in the two dollar amounts?
So the on the 288, that was we had the original sole source T&M contract with them, and right before they had purchased some of the materials, gotten done some of the work, and then were ready to mobilize, and they came back and said that it was going to cost them an additional $288,000. So that was in relation to the T&M contract, and then we stopped that because we didn't have those funds in the budget to pay for that additional work. And then we put it out to bid, and that's where the 661, which is the 460, is the subtraction of the available budget minus the 661 bid price.
It'll take me a minute here. When was this originally put out to bid, and what was the time difference between when it was awarded and then they went to mobilize?
So the bid was put out in June and open in July, and that's where the 661 came out. The T&M contract, I believe, was done in December.
Okay. I guess at just the most basic level, it's my experience on doing projects is all out of repair. So if I come to you and tell you that, hey, your car is going to cost twice as much to repair as it did yesterday, I better have a really good justification as to why. And that's what I'm seeing in what's presented here is it's costing a whole bunch more, but not a real good reason why.
Yeah, and part of that is the, like I was explaining before, the material allowance portion. But yeah, they're on the reason why the prices went up so much between December and April. I'm also not satisfied with that answer as well, and that's why we terminated that portion of the work.
Are we separating these out into the, as if I remember right, there was a section of this that had to do with the water turbines, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And there was something that was separated out there? Or that
yeah,
was
so the
canceled?
Right. So the water, the microturbines portion is not part of this contract.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a further council input? Madam Clerk, we have anybody signed up?
No, we don't.
Thank you. At this point, the motion is to adopt Ordinance 2022-17. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Vice Mayor, may I make an amendment? I'd like to move to amend this ordinance and reduce the amount requested by $526,447.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
And, okay, Mr. Bell, speak to your motion.
I would like to give some more time to take a deeper dive into the whole project there with the chlorination. I feel at this point we need to take a better look at the numbers that are presented here and understand. I still am not satisfied that the numbers that we're getting, the increase in cost, is justified.
So I guess, I mean, we had this for Monday. We could have asked those questions, I guess, through email to give some kind of a better note on this. Is there any council discussion on the amendment? Ms. Coleman?
So this went out to bid, went out to an RFP, correct? And they met the they met the requirements of the bid, the proposal, correct? Thank you.
Mr. Tungle.
Yeah, we went through the process of getting this done. So I think it's, I won't be supporting the amendment. I think I'm ready to pass this resolution, this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tungle. Mr. Nicholson.
Yes, I'd be in support of passing this resolution.
This is on the amendment to remove $500,000 from the wastewater or from the water treatment, the chlorine treatment facility.
Yes, I'd be in support of removing that.
Thank you, Ms. Libby.
Why?
Yeah, I would be in support of removing it as well and taking a little look at it. I think 53% increase is extremely high, and just making sure that we're getting what we, you know, what we're going to get our dollars worth, I guess. So, thank you.
I won't be supporting this,
Mr. Vice Mayor.
Go ahead, Mr. Tungle.
Yeah, so if we delay this 500, how is that going to do with the project? Is it going to be putting up again for bid?
Mr. Tungle? Mr. Tungle, I am going to speak my piece, and then I'll come back, and that was part of my question, is how it's going to affect the outcome of the project. As I said, I oppose this amendment due to the fact that it did go out to bid. We did have the information, and we are now in probably, by delaying this project again, and I've seen it in councils past where this has happened, and it comes back again, and the prices increase. Almost 100% of the time I've seen them increase. I think this, like I said, this has gone through the process. These are the numbers that we've had. We've had the time to address them prior to this meeting to get some answers to it. So for those reasons, I will oppose this. And because the other thing is, when we go out to bid on a project and we award that bid, we have a threat of a potential lawsuit costing us more money if we don't uphold that and if we start meddling in the business of the administration. So with those reasons, I will oppose it, and I would like to ask what this would do. Mr. Cummins, if you could answer, what would this do to the project?
So yes, the we would have to put this out to bid again. The timeline, so we're in October, we could put it out later this month. We have a minimum of 30 days per our policies, so we'd get that bid back in November, award it again late November, early December. I think that's, we were planning on doing this. We could do this any time of the year, but since we're dealing with the chlorination system, we have a phased approach to do this, to bring one train online and bring the other train online, but it's, from a risk management perspective, it's better to do it in the shoulder seasons. So we were planning on doing this in starting April 15th. I still think that's possible to rebid. If we do the rebid, I think the risk there is that the costs increase. I think that's, but we, it's, both of those options are possible. I don't know if that's answered your, do you have any further questions?
It kind of somewhat answers my question. What I understand is if we go out to rebid on this, and like I stated earlier, every single time that the council did this and made us go out to rebid, it cost the city more money and sometimes into the millions in a project. So I thank you for that. Is that what you were getting at, Mr. Tungle?
Yes, I think I won't be in support of the amendment. I'll be in support the way it's written. So I don't want this project get delayed. Then I end up, I'm pretty sure we're going to end up paying more money. So I will be in support, and now it's written. Thank you.
You're in this, Mr. Tompkins?
Yeah, Mr. Vice Mayor, members of the council, I'm actually not going to try to convince anybody one way or the other. I think I have extra information that would help. First of all, the RFP process was done properly. We had four at the pre-bid, and we only had one bid. And it was unfortunately the same one that had bid before, and the price went up quite a bit, mostly electrical. Most of it was due because of remobbing back out. It went up. And then also, if anybody's curious, it doesn't really affect us operationally. I mean, we don't really want to be using chlorine, but the utility can work with whatever the council decides to delay it or to not delay it. We just have to make sure we have enough chlorine coming to make it happen. But I struggled with this a lot, and I talked to Mr. Lattic about it, and basically, I kind of came to the same conclusion that we put it out to bid properly. People came in. We only got one bid. And repeating that process, which there wasn't really any deficiencies in our bidding process, if we just repeat that at a later time, there's the danger that we would get the same bid, and it might be more again. So I'm not happy with it, but I can make it work either way, if we want to take some time. But I was advocating putting it on this budget amendment so that we could just move forward and clear the deck with it. So that's my input.
Thank you. Mr. Bell.
So what you're saying here, or indicating, was that there was some additional costs, and that was that part of a change in scope of work? And when this bid was accepted, what was the price that it was accepted at? And is there something in the contract that allows it to come back and say, hey, this is not what it's going to cost. It's going to cost something different.
So from my familiarity with what happened on the rebid is that the electrical portion went up a lot. Bob and I both approached good contractors, some of them are located on the island. You probably know who we probably approached. And also contractors that we knew could do the work to try to solicit more bids. And we weren't successful. But most of it was due to electrical. Maybe Bob can speak to that. But from what I saw, the electrical cost for this project went up quite a bit. And that's why we're thinking that maybe, say, an electrical contractor could have helped out.
That kind of answers a little bit more what I'm looking at, and explains a little bit more why a difference in cost. It's just concerning when you see a line in here, the way it's written, is that 2 weeks before I'm going to come out and do your job, oh, by the way, it's going to cost you twice as much. You can understand the concern for that. I think I've got enough confidence in your answers here that everyone's acted in good faith.
It concerns me as well. It concerns me a lot, and it's a lot of money. I just don't know that we can reproduce it better. I don't think that doing the exact same thing over again is going to give us a better result. And so that's why I kind of reluctantly thought that we should just clear the deck of this project. We don't really want to use gaseous chlorine, but we can. We can do it another year. I can tell you that there's all kinds of regulatory stuff that I have to do. We're under a RMP plan, a risk management plan specific to chlorine, which all goes away. But I can certainly operationally make it work either way. We can take some time to look at it. We can make that work, or we can move forward. I just thought I had a little information that would help out.
And I appreciate that. And that's kind of one of the problems we've run into lately, is being short-staffed. Everyone's doing two or three jobs and is overworked, so it's become a little more difficult to get a question fully answered because everyone is doing so much more. And that's something I think we need to address down the road, is getting us back up to full staff. So thank you for the information.
Thank you. And as I stated earlier, that the you know, every time a company bids on something, they spend a lot of money on staff time preparing that bid, and that gets paid used generally through the bid process. And so, yes, it will go up. At this point, is there any further on the amendment? And the amendment was, can we restate that, please, was to remove...
To reduce the funding in Ordinance 2022-17 by the amount of $526,447. And I'm assuming, Mr. Bell, that you were speaking about the Water Proprietary Fund, the Pyramid Water Treatment Plant Chlorine Upgrade Project.
Correct.
Yeah.
So with that, is there any further? We call a roll call on the amendment, please.
Certainly. Mr. Bell?
Thank you for the information. I'll vote no.
Ms. Luby?
I'm also going to vote no.
Mr. Nicholson?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Ms. Coleman?
No.
And Mr. Tungle?
No.
Motion failed. Is there any further discussion on the main motion of Ordinance 22-17? A motion to adopt this. May I have a roll call, please?
Certainly. Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
And Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes unanimously. Next is the new business item review. It's a review of new liquor license application for Amelia's Restaurant. Council, the local and local governing body, has been given the opportunity to object to applications of liquor licenses. At this point, staff recommends no objection. Is there anyone that does anyone wish to make a motion? Hearing no motion, we'll move on to the Canvas Committee report on October 4th, 2022, the general election and certification of election results. May I have a motion and a second to approve the certification of election results as presented by the Canvas Committee?
I'll make a motion to certify the results of the election from the Canvas Committee.
Second.
Second.
It's been moved by Luby and seconded by Coleman. And we'll turn it over to the manager.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. pursuant to code, we held the election. There were winners and there were losers. And the lady that can speak the best about this is sitting to my left, our clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Homka. So as you all know, we conducted the regular municipal election on October 4. And the election board tallied the ballots cast that day. The Canvas Committee met on October 7 to tally the remainder of the ballots cast, which consisted of early, absentee, questioned, and special needs ballots, and to compile the final results. The Canvas Committee reports in your packet along with the final results, which are submitted to Council this evening for certification. Me, as the City Clerk, and the Canvas Committee recommend certification of the results as presented. And if you have any questions, I will do my best to respond.
Is there any council discussion? Is there anybody signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, there's not.
And so the motion is to certify the election results as presented by the Canvas Committee. Madam Clerk, can we call the roll, please?
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
And Mr. Robinson?
Yes. And with this vote, the council has certified the election results as presented. Ordinance 2022-18, amending sections of Title 17, Buildings and Construction of the Unalaska Code of Ordinances by adopting portions of the 2018 edition of the Uniform Public or Plumbing Code and 2020 edition of the National Electrical Code and the 2021 edition of the International Residential Code. May I have a motion and a second to introduce Ordinance 2022-18 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on October 25th, 2022.
I'll move to introduce Ordinance 2022-18 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on October 25th, 2022.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Coleman, seconded by Luby. Mr. Manager.
Yes, this particular matter has been in discussions for quite a few years, I know since I've been here, and it's time to amend this part of the code so that it reflects the building code standards and sources of how we measure those. For example, CABO is no longer something that we use, and it needs to be reflected so that as we cite someone for, you know, construction problems, that we're actually citing the correct code and referring to those throughout our ordinances. And that's basically what this one is about.
Is there any questions from the council? Ms. Coleman.
So I guess I'm a little interested in R301.2, paragraph 1, about the table, the seismic design category. I just wonder if somebody can give me some insight as to D2 and what, how does that fit on the spectrum of what does that mean? Can anybody answer that?
I see Bob walking up here. I'm actually looking for that specific. Can you cite that again?
It's on council page, the packet 76. Yeah, so it's got this on 10, we're at this table here. I was looking through that. It's talking about the conventional light frame construction. So I guess if I wanted to go out and build a house, these are the parameters in which I need to construct it. I was wondering, I'm just kind of curious about the seismic design category D2, what that means and how does that relate to any previous building before adoption of this, or was there?
I would have to go back to CABO 97 to see what it is. I doubt it has changed. This D2, I believe, to my best of my ability, is the most severe seismic category that there is. They have in the code itself, they have maps. It's sort of like the state of Alaska on sort of like a half of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And so this just clarifies that our locality is in the D2 seismic area. A structural engineer would use that information then to do any design for any buildings built in this locale.
Thank you. I know it was suggested we could go to work session on this and kind of talk about these things, but I really don't have any interest in doing that, though I appreciate it. This kind of stuff interests me, but I was just kind of curious about the designation on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Libby.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as how much change is there from what we had before? I mean, is this going to cost residents a lot of extra money because we are now D2? But like you said, you thought maybe we were already. But is there other things that the wind load is this going to increase construction costs in this town? I'm kind of curious there.
So it's under our current structure where we cite the most recent edition, it references CABO, but it also references the publisher, which is the International Council of Building Officials, ICBO. In the early 2000s, ICBO became part of the International Code Council, which now publishes the International Residential Code. And so this has all sort of become the International Residential Code. However, there are certain local, I mean, the International Residential Code is valid for the whole nation, maybe internationally. I'm not sure about that, but it's widely, I think over 40 states have adopted this at the state level as their building code. Alaska is not one of them, so the state leaves it up to the jurisdiction to have its own building code for residences. So as far as the question of increased costs, I think I would have to go back, and I can bring that back to the next council meeting or beforehand. I know that the wind speeds, I think, typically were around 150 before. Now they're 165. I don't know. Even 150 is a pretty severe wind design speed. And so I don't know how much more additional cost that would be. But I think other than that, everything is quite standard that I don't think has changed. I will get back more specific information on how would we infer that between the CABO and the IRC. Can get you more information.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I just built a, well, not just a few years ago, but it was engineered for 200-mile-an-hour winds and the seismic activity as well. And it was pretty expendy. You know, instead of 2x4 construction, it was actually 4x8. and a lot of fasteners and tying the roof together and tying into the concrete and everything. So I'm just concerned a little bit about that, about residential. So thank you.
Yeah, on the flip side of that, I'd be concerned of not having something uniform with that builders generally fall back on and are used to putting bids in and have to study our code to do that, and then therefore the price goes up there. So on the flip side, that could be a double-edged sword. But thank you. Mr. Bell?
Yeah, just a quick question. And yeah, obviously, you know, increased wind loads and snow loads will make a difference in building costs. Seeing how this has changed, do we expect down the road to see change in commercial code too, I assume?
So we see that the state is in the middle of doing a revision to the state code, and that's why we have not address the International Building Code for commercial properties at this time. We expect that to be adopted by the state in the spring, and so at that time we will then bring it back to council to revise our code to bring that up to the state standards.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr. Nicholson.
I don't have any questions or comments on this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nicholson. Mr. Tungle.
No question. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there, Madam Clerk, is anybody signed up for this issue?
No, sir.
And this is a motion to reschedule or to schedule ordinance 2022-18 for public hearing and second reading on October 25th, 2022. Madam Clerk, can I have a roll call, please?
Certainly. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
And Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. And at this time, are there any directives to the manager from the council? Hearing nothing, we're now at the final opportunity for the community to provide information to the council or make announcements. It's got a 3-minute time limit. Are there any further announcements? If you'd state your name for the record.
My name is William Carter. I'm the owner of Ambiental Options. We're a hazardous material emergency response contractor. We were contacted by the city of Unalaska back in 2020. We were asked to come out and help provide insight and help for the COVID-19 response. We were asked to help manage the quarantine facility and also to help disinfect the city buildings. We had a time and materials contract, which was open-ended. I told my wife we'd be out here 2 months, maybe three. She now knows I'm a liar. We've been out here for over 2 years. It's been a great project. I'm glad that COVID has started to slow down. Everything was good. We had an open-ended contract. We were ready to demob. We've got another project coming up, a very large one, that we're excited about. And people know that we're doing it. We've got millions of dollars of already approved funding for that project that will benefit the city. It's an archaeological project. We won't get into that right now, but the city also asked us to bid some work. We did bid the work. That work was originally slated to start in July. Then it was delayed 2 months, and there was some funny stuff that happened. They said, why don't you contest the bid? September 9th, I contested the bid. I wrote a letter to Chris Laddick. I never have heard a response back from Chris on that. It's been over a month. Then Chris showed up out here last week, retroactively canceling our contract, effective May 10th, and said, you'll have to pay your own way home, you'll have to demote yourself, and see, I don't have time to meet with you, and I don't have time to meet with your wife. Mr. Homkin on the other end was very professional. He did meet with us. I gave him information. Whether how that got passed off or communicated to Chris, I don't know. But I can tell you, I've worked from Uktiagbik to Metlakatla, from Eagle to Shimya. I have never been treated as disrespectfully and as terrible as I was by Chris Laddick. We have been financially impacted by this because never were we intending to demote ourselves or to buy our own tickets home. And I'm not sure what Chris is trying to do. I suspect probably trying to justify his wages. But to cancel our contract the way he did was wrong. I have spoken with Mike Hansen. I've spoken with Patrick Shipp. Both of them were under the impression that we would get demoted out of here. And Chris decided that we wouldn't. And like I said, as of Friday, we got a letter saying retroactive cancellation of the contract, effective May 10th. So I'm going to leave a packet of information here. You're more than welcome to read it. I'll leave it with Margie. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there any further community input or announcements? All right. Hearing none, having completed all the items of the agenda, we are adjourned at 7:22. Thank you.